Check, what's going on, y'all? My name is Megaran, and I am testing out a brand new podcast. You know, I heard it was easy to do, so I just did it. And here we go. Let me tell you a story. This story took place in November of 2017. Like the hit go. The show must go on. As many great stories as I have, I honestly have just as many negative experiences at shows or on stage. Honestly, I try not to dwell on them too much, but I haven't completely blocked them from my memory either, because I feel it's just as important to keep those in mind for perspective. Wins or losses, they all build character. You can't enjoy the good times until you've been through some bad. There's an old saying, I believe it was Batman 89, but you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. And here we go. You can rap for 1,000 people, 2,000, 10,000, and actually still have a terrible show if no one cares, no one pays attention, no one buys merch. And you can rap for 3 people and have the greatest time of your life. Smiles, frowns, the banter is flowing, and they all buy merch. And though I might want to pretend that I'm a long way from rapping for small crowds, I'm really not. Perspective is super important in our case as indie musicians. It's extremely important to me that fans that come to a Megaran show have the best time possible. Whenever I'm in charge, i.e. when you see my name on the poster, the largest, that means that I make several of the final logistical decisions on that show. Maybe not all of them, but several. If my name is smaller, I'm just support, and usually I have no say on how it's going to turn out. When I do have the power, like He-Man, I like to ensure, one, that the show takes place at a safe and relatively clean venue run by some trustworthy folks, and two, the quality of the support acts is top-notch, and most importantly, three, that the show begins and ends on time and runs smoothly. Nobody wants to be in a club until 2 a.m. on a work night to see some indie cats that they never heard of. I learned that 1, 2, and 3 were essential during a stop in Jacksonville, November 30th, 2017. I remember it like it was last week. It's the only time I've ever had to end the show early before playing my final jam, Splash Woman, and doing some dancing. This one, in hindsight, I really should have peeped the signs of things that can go wrong. Said you can run the red lights but peep the street signs. You can run the red lights but peep the street signs. That's a very inside joke. Shout out to Busy Bone. Here we go. The show started late on a Sunday night, 9 p.m. doors. Support acts start at 10. This is already bad. There were at least 4 acts, not including the 2 that I brought with me on tour that would play direct support. And the drinks have been flowing for super cheap all evening, which had this crowd a little more lit than usual. The venue is called Nighthawks. I'd worked with this promoter before. I won't say his name. You'll find out later why. And he assured me that these late shows work in the city, Duval, due to the city's propensity to come out late, drink, and stay even later for their music. I started my set at probably 12:45 a.m., later than I ever had at that point in my career. I'm halfway along into my set. It's grooving, it's moving. I do a skit in the middle where I sing the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song by the Fresh Prince, GOAT rapper of all time. It's a fun bit that gets the whole crowd involved because everyone, literally everyone, you could have been born literally yesterday and you know the words to this song. So a little singing of Fresh Prince sounds innocent enough, right? Who knew that the cleanest rapper in history could incite violence on this Sunday night in Jacksonville? Oh, it happened. This time, before I could finish the verse, quicker than you could say, yo, home, smell you later, I hear this loud crash of glass and a few screams from the audience. K Murdoch is behind me. He stops the music. We hear the promoter of the show screaming bloody murder. I look up at him. His face is a gross mix of blood, glass, and cheap beer. What the heck happened? Turns out, a group of women said that this man was harassing them. And one member of the entourage decided to teach him a lesson by blasting him in the face with a full mug of cheap beer. The combination of glass cutting his face plus the remaining alcohol in the mug had to make for a gnarly grip of pain. So dude screamed loudly, "What the f-?" You know, and "Arr!" and all those things while running to the bathroom to try to clean his face off. It's probably the only time I ever used an expletive on the stage, as I was so disturbed by this situation. I think K Murdoch still brings this up to me. So I believe the words that I said were, "What kind of bullshit is this?" Rhetorically, to this crowd of stunned fans. The woman who decided to clap back, or at least attempt to, said, "Well, he shouldn't have been bothering us." At that time, I questioned to myself, maybe to the crowd, if the punishment had even fit the crime. I said, "This dude's bleeding." But looking back, it didn't matter. He shouldn't have been bothering those women. Though I'm sure he got a rude awakening with a mug to the mug. Best lesson I learned out of that: don't work with scumbags who are like mildly problematic on Facebook already. Don't mess with people who harass women. So since the victim here, this term is being used loosely for mug face, was also the person organizing the show and paying us, we had to look towards him for the next move. He yelled from the bathroom, "Brr, brr!" And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Brr, brr, brr!" And I'm like, "What?" And then it got clear about a third time when he said, "Shut it down," while plucking glass from his huge beard. So it was clear to me that this show was ending early, even though 1 a.m. would hardly constitute an early ending. I asked the crowd to meet me at the merch table for photos and a chance to sell my wares, but the promoter was not playing games. "No merch. Everybody out now." In the words of the classic Mobb Deep song, "Party over, tell the rest of the crew." "Well, alrighty then," I said in my Ace Ventura voice. "Show's over, guys. I'm really sorry. I'll be back soon. Thanks for coming out. Get home safely." We ended the show with a towel around his face. The promoter thanked me for coming and issued us some cash for the performance. I was ready to leave. We start packing up. No merch. All good. But lastly, I turned to the promoter and I was like, "Yo, dude, were you bothering those women?" He denied it. "Nah, man." But his tone led me to believe that he might have been a little too sore from his advances being declined. But he screamed out, "I even bought those yuck mouth broads free drinks," which was a red flag to me. What does buying free drinks have to do with anything? Anyway, I can't help thinking that if I had exercised a little bit more of the leadership that I'd actually been bestowed in this regard, this might not have happened. I don't know. Because if I'd had my way, we'd have been out of the building before midnight, let alone me still being on stage by 1 a.m. Since then, I've learned that it's worth having a conversation about keeping indie rap shows timely. The age-old idea of waiting for people to show up is terribly outdated and, quite frankly, pretty lazy. If you tell people you're going on at 8, you should not have to wait till 11. "Oh, they're still coming. They're still coming. Let's catch the latecomers, the stragglers. There's another show happening across town. They're coming from there." Nah, man. Those people deserve to miss out. You told them it was 8 o'clock. My worst show was probably my first show, honestly. And it had none of those problems. I had a whole different set of issues. We had a venue a few blocks from my house in Philly called Moody's on the Pike. And they held a weekly open mic night. I played there with a few of my friends, and I rapped the songs on my PlayStation-made beats about life on our block as 22-year-olds, which really couldn't have been that exciting. But we called our block of Woodstock the Stock, affectionately. So I creatively sampled and interpolated some lines and sections from Prince's hit song Pop Life, and then we called it Stock Life. Genius, right? Don't answer that. Anyway, we spit our PG-rated bars to this adult contemporary crowd full of high school vocabulary terms mixed with what we had learned from the MCs of the day. The crowd went mild. Dig it. Not only sampling and interpolating Prince without having his pipes and creative ability, probably one of the most sacrilegious acts you could ever embark upon in black music, but midway through my verse, I hear members of this crowd start to make an annoying fire truck-like sound, like this. And I'm like, what the heck? And then I realized what they were doing. Right as our surefire hit chorus was coming up, they hadn't even heard it yet. The sound was definitely a reference to Showtime at the Apollo, the long-running television show where if a performer got enough booze, then right there on the spot, a dirty, dusty hobo character named Sandman Sims would come out on stage, and he would literally use his cane to hook you off stage and then dance a 30-second jig in your place to the roar of the crowd. The siren signaled that it was time to enter Sandman, and I'm not talking about the Metallica album. Weird thing was that Moody's didn't adopt the Showtime at the Apollo booing and Sandman ritual, so these people in the back that were getting the noise started were just doing it for the people who knew. And believe me, I knew, so I felt it. We ended our song early, and honestly, I don't think we ever played Stock Life again.